crap.
Of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a cat. Fish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. But we grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Cause we're them old boys raised on shotguns.
California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
It's old Shazizz here. Hope you all doing well out there. You're listening to Mad Science here on my new faster modem. Hopefully this thing will not let me drop out like it has been in the last few days with the old modem. Anyway, I posted some links over in the ShazizzRadio.com chat room and over at the Wake Radio chat room as well. Starting up there at the top, let me see. I posted a link to a Wikipedia article about a rectifier. I also posted a picture link in there, one as I was talking about. And then below that, I posted a link for a mercury arc rectifier. And moving on down even further than that, I posted a link to a man with a video that has an old antique style battery charger using a rectifier tube. And I can't remember what he called that one there. Doggone it. Anyway, I'll have to look that back up. Also posted a link of another video that I just kind of grabbed out of midair that kind of explains on how LED technology works. And basically today what I was wanting to talk about is energy transfer. See, the biggest problem in the alternative energy portion of the deal is trying to figure out how to, basically get around Lenz's law. You know, that back EMF problem that everybody keeps fighting with when they're trying to build either a self-charging generator or, any other alternative generator that requires it not to be under a lot of stress or a heavy load, so to speak. Anyway, there are a few people out there that claim that they've already got a device that they've been selling on the market that's supposed to be all in one generator. I put out a video here recently called X13 Fun, and it was using a motor that came up out of an air conditioner unit. Terry Woodruff found these motors out there, and they're a permanent magnet rotor. Really, really impressive. In the first two videos, one X13 and the one X13 Fun. You can see that all I'm doing is just barely turning that with my finger, and I'm getting up to 29 volts of electricity off this thing. And then as me and Raymond, who should be joining me pretty soon if he can get his computer back online, as him and I were doing some experiments with the thing, we actually had that thing up to about 450 volts AC. So it's quite impressive. Now, the X13 Fun video, I actually took a weed eater mulcher. It's kind of like a vacuum sweeper. You know, it sucks up the leaves off the ground and then chops them all up and spits them into a bag. So I used that mulcher as a power source for the a squirrel cage fan that the X13 was mounted in. And so essentially what was going on is it would actually create sort of a Venturi effect and suck the air in from the atmosphere and blow the air into the squirrel cage fan and get that up to speed and spin it up real good. When it was up to its highest RPMs, I could light up a 150 watt light bulb, and then instantaneously Lenz's law would kick in, back EMF would start slowing down the squirrel cage fan. Now the reason for using this thing as a basically a tornado in a box, a wind generator, there's a company out there that pretty much are doing the same thing using a flywheel system out there. I haven't seen any of these personally, but I can understand the concept of them. So anyway, the whole concept of using air to turn the squirrel cage fan is to take away from the initial load. So you're not, there's no way for the load on the generator head to be able to directly couple back to the power source, whatever that may be. Whether you're using an internal combustion engine or running it off of an electric motor, however you do it, wind power. So there's no physical way that it can actually couple back to the prime mover. And so the next stage of the game is to try to get that energy that is now being generated to where you can use it without slowing down the generator head itself. Now, how the back EMF actually works is that whenever you, according to Lenz's law, whenever you induce a current in wire, you create a magnetic field. Well, that magnetic field instantaneously creates an opposing magnetic field, which they call back EMF. I like to shorten it up and call it a second electromagnetic field so that it could be easier to understand, so to speak. Can't even pronounce it right. Anyway, so what's going on here? You know, why is this happening? Well, essentially what you've got going on is that whenever you whenever you're just running your generator head, it's producing the voltage, all right? It's inducing a voltage in the wire. And so that energy wants to go somewhere. It don't care where it goes, it just wants to go somewhere. And so what happens is the moment you you hit the switch, it closes the circuit and allows the electron flow to make a complete path through your load, which let's just say for this instance it's your light bulb. And so your light bulb lights up, and here we go, let's get Raymond on there. Hello, brother, you're on air. You got your microphone going?
Yeah, I think so.
Alright, cool. So anyway, it makes the light bulb, when the electrons are flowing through the light bulb, it vibrates the tungsten element inside there, which creates friction, which in turn creates heat, which in turn creates light. So now you got light going on, but you also still have the electron flow. That energy still wants to go somewhere. So as it stands today, it goes right back into the same generator head that you're initially trying to generate the electricity with, which in turn, now Lenz's law comes into play. It begins to create a second magnetic field, electromagnetic field that I like to call a secondary electromagnetic field, and they like to call it back EMF. But when you say back EMF, people's eyes roll sideways and upside down because they don't understand what it is you're talking about, because not everybody's an electrician or electronics tech. So I like to say it creates a second magnetic field, which is exactly what it does. And now that second magnetic field is going to get just as strong as the first magnetic field, because nature is now trying to balance itself out. And so in order for nature to get balanced out, something's going on there. That second field begins to slow down the armature and is acting as a brake on the armature, which causes your generator head to bog way, way, way down. And so after running some tests with this whole deal, we've talked about when I used the fan to blow the squirrel cage so that there would be no direct coupling between the prime mover and the actual generator head itself. Now we have to figure out a way to get the energy that we want that has just been generated in the generator head from point A to point B without creating this back EMF, or allow Lenz's law to even come into play. All we want to do is allow that energy to have a place to go without creating that havoc that we call back EMF, or that I like to call second electromagnetic field. So how are we going to do this? Well, I started off running some tests, and the tungsten element light bulb is like essentially you're allowing the entire current flow to go through there. Even though there is resistance in the tungsten, it still makes the circuit and allows all those electrons to be able to have a complete path back to the generator head, which in turn makes the brake, slows it down. So from that point on, I went to a smaller tungsten element, and I noticed that there was a major reduction in how much it slowed down the armature from this point, because it's basically creating somewhat of a resistance to slow those electrons down enough so that the field inside the generator head can't become strong enough to literally bring it to a complete stop. Which and then that turn would dim the light bulb all the way completely down. Now when you have the RPMs up really high on the squirrel cage, the X13 was capable of lighting the 150 watt light bulb to its fullest brightest and probably then some. But once that flow was able to go back into the generator head, it created the second field, slowed it down, and the bulb dimmed down all the way down to where you just see just a little red hot element in there. However, it's still producing heat. So from that point on, I went to a smaller light bulb with a thinner element inside there and was able to light that up. And then from that point on, I changed over to something slightly different. I used some LED technology. With LEDs, it's not the current flow that's actually creating the light from the LED. It's the interaction between the electrons and the protons inside there and actually creating photons. When the positive and negative meet with materials that's inside the LED, the electrons interacting with these materials releases photons in the form of light. There you go. So, with high voltage, you can light up amazing amount of LEDs without creating the back EMF that is normally associated with trying to run your generator. So there's one method. We've seen a reduction from the time from the tungsten element, the large tungsten element that created the massive break, to the smaller one that was a lesser break, and then down to the LED technology, which was an even smaller break. So we know that in that particular direction we can literally reduce Lenz's law to the extent that it's not slowing the generator completely down. With one LED light bulb that normally runs off of AC, that was actually for like Christmas lighting and stuff, with just one bulb inside the deal, I was able to light the light bulb up and still have about 140 some odd volts left on the voltmeter. So that tells me I was going in the right direction. Now, when we talk about energy transfer, we're talking about literally taking the energy away from the generator head and pushing it off as far away as we can get, but changing the energy from one form to the next, so that there is absolutely no possibility for the electrons to make the return path back into the generator head. Now, I posted the link about the mercury arc rectifier and also a argon rectifier tube, because I wanted to explain that during Edison and Tesla's time, whenever they were doing the switch from AC to DC current, when Tesla's AC won out, Edison had already had in play some DC deals, like the high voltage electric doggone it, elevators. And so now you had to be able to figure out, with the new current coming in, to be able to rectify that current into from high voltage AC into high voltage DC, so that these things would still function. That's where the mercury arc rectifier came into play. And how it functioned was, it had a little pillow of mercury at the bottom of it. When the high voltage AC come in, it essentially created a dead short, which heated up the mercury just like it would be the tungsten element in your light bulb, and got the mercury so hot that it would literally vaporize inside the bulb, and the high voltage AC coming in would continue to energize the mercury gases inside there to the plasma state, and therefore creating pressure, and enough pressure that the electrons weren't able to flow back in the other direction. And therefore you had high voltage DC coming out, and Edison could still run his elevators and such. So how does that apply to what it is that I'm talking about? Essentially, by not giving the electrons a path back to the generator head, then Lenz's law won't come into play. And so from start to finish, if you start off from your prime mover separate from your generator head, then there's no way for it to couple back there in order to give you a losses or slowdowns and basically stop the machine. Now, if using the knowledge that we've got from the mercury arc rectifier and the argon rectifiers, now we're going to take that energy from one point, and we're going to change the energy to a different form and move it away without allowing any electrons to flow back into the generator head. So there's multiple different ways to do this. LED technology could very well be one of them. Raymond talked to me here recently about running some tests about taking some solar panels and some fluorescent bulbs and potentially bright LEDs to see what kind of energy transfer we can literally get from changing that energy from what it would be the coming out of the generator head to a different energy, and basically either using light or heat in order to move that energy away. So if you have a let's say you have a mercury arc rectifier or a argon rectifier, when you create the plasma inside the center of that plasma, there's heat involved. It's actually producing visible light. There's several different spectrums of light out there depending on which types of gases you're using inside your tube. So essentially you'll get some different colored gases, either argon, helium, neon, xenon, and there's another one if I can find it and remember what it was. So anyway, basically, now we've took and removed the possibility for any of the energy transfer to go back to the prime mover, took the any possibility for the energy to go to back into the generator head, and so now at the very least you got a more efficient generating system. So from that point on, now we got to be able to run our inefficient appliances that we've got. So if we're moving the energy off and then turning it back into usable current using capacitors or any other method like that, then from that point on, then we can draw our load off of there. This is the concept that I've been talking about for some time. So, Brayman, you got any thoughts on any of this yet?
Yes, I do, Jesus. I'll tell you what, I didn't understand, because I'm not electronics person, I didn't understand anything you were saying before I went down to or came up there to visit with you. You shined a light on me that was unbelievably bright, and yesterday morning I did your one wire experiment for the second time. The first time I used a large diameter 4 foot fluorescent lights, and unfortunately, I did not have a 12-volt input oil burner igniter. I had a 110 AC input, and I lit I lit 6 bulbs, and I had a watt meter, and I took the watt meter and plugged it into the wall, and then plugged the oil burner igniter into that to measure the actual wattage being used to light the bulbs. Well, I lit 6 of the fat bulbs, and I lit 2, and then I increased it by 1 bulb 4 times. So gradually, and at first, it was using roughly 6 watts per bulb to light the first 2, so that was 12 watts. Then I put the third bulb on it, and it was 12 point something. I mean, I'm sorry, 18 point. No, 17 point something. In other words, what I'm trying to say is, the more bulbs I put in line, the fewer watts per bulb. At 6 bulbs, I was using 30 watts, exactly 5 watts per bulb. Yesterday morning, I did the same experiment again, but I used the really small diameter, the newer bulbs, the energy saver bulbs.
Yeah.
Shazizz, I lit 5 bulbs. My watt meter was reading 0.1 watts for a total of 5 bulbs. So the folks out there don't misunderstand. The bulbs did not light as bright as they would in a light fixture. But the total of the 5 bulbs were putting out more light than a 40-watt incandescent light bulb. More light.
And you were running these on a single wire system connected to the ground?
Not to the ground. I went back to the oil burner igniter.
Okay.
Igniter. And the thing is, it was only using 1/10 of a watt to produce over 40 watts of incandescent light. And yet, after 15 minutes of operation, I put my hands on the bulbs. They were not warm. They were cold to the touch. I mean, as if somebody had just taken them out of a refrigerator.
Well, see, now, that's basically what I'm talking about. You know, you completed the path from one end of the oil burner igniter back to the other end of the oil burner igniter, and you'll note that with the single bulb on there, you was actually drawing more than you would be with the multiples on there.
Exactly.
Well, that's because the path was shorter then.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? That's kind of like the tungsten element light bulb going directly to the generator head. I mean, it just gives the path a straight shot right back to the deal. And there's where the ground comes into play. You know, by plugging it into the ground off of one leg off of there, there's no direct path back to the burner igniter. You see what I'm saying? What we did out there in the video when you was out here visiting was we took the energy off one leg of that and we shot it through the bulb and then straight down into the dirt. So there was no way for the electrons to complete a path back into the igniter, therefore drawing more amperage and such.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying?
And that's what's going to be my very next experiment, is to go to the ground. The only reason I didn't go to the ground is because it's in my shop, and I don't have a wire the right size to go that distance to outside. But that is truly my next experiment on that. And it was absolutely amazing. I mean, you're 100% right, kiddo. 100% right.
The energy doesn't care where it goes. It just wants to go somewhere.
Exactly. And
so if you use it on the way by, such as getting visible light, now, you know, when I talk about energy transfer, a lot of people's like, well, you can't run nothing off of this. Well, you can't, because it's not the same sense that what you're doing before. All you're doing is moving energy from one place to the next. But since it's so super simple to make high voltage, you just generate more than you need. You see what I'm saying? You still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I do. I understand exactly what you're saying now. I mean, people need to like I said this once before, and I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but they need to keep quiet and listen to you. When you start talking, that everybody that thinks they know something tries to interrupt because they think they know what you're saying, but they really and truly don't. They need to just 5 minutes, be quiet and listen to what you're saying and give you some credit. I mean, I'm telling you, I don't know anything about electronics, okay? But that's why when I was there with you, I kept my mouth shut and I listened to what you were saying, and I, thinking that you knew more than me, I listened and I paid attention. And I'm telling you, man, it's unbelievable.
If we take that energy from all we're doing whenever the energy's coming out of that generator head is we're changing the form of that energy. We're not getting rid of it. We're not worried about losses at this point either, because like I said, it's really super simple to make high voltage. Now, one thing I found out with LEDs, LEDs will work at lower voltage, but they'll work just as well at extremely high voltage. I was running over 120 volts AC through, actually it's over 150 volts AC through an LED bulb, and it was actually going back into the generator. Alright, it was running just like you would a regular light bulb. But what I noticed is that it didn't bog that generator down any at all. And so that tells me now we got something to work with here, because we're going to take that energy and change it to light via the LED, the technology that the LED is using, and then we can transfer that light over to like what you was talking about, to a solar panel, you know? And so now you absolutely have no direct coupling back to the generator. So there's no way that you can get any back EMF off of this deal. You see what I'm saying?
I understand exactly what you're saying, because I have done your experiments on my own and not knowing what I was doing. But I did exactly what you told me to do one way. Now I need to do it the other way. You told me several different ways to do this. And you're right. There's more than one way to skin a cat. I mean, dang on, you can go back to the thing or you can go straight to the ground. But it creates light. And,
even when Okay, if you look at that X-13 fun video that I put out, even when that generator had almost come to a complete stop because it was basically dead shorted with the tungsten element, the 150-watt light bulb, even when that thing almost came to a complete stop, the prime mover, which was the weed eater mulcher that I used as my blower motor, all right, it didn't bog down in the least. It kept on going steady, all right? The wind wasn't strong enough to keep pushing the squirrel cage over the electronic brake that was created by that tungsten element. However, it was, it was still blowing just as much as it was before. So that first stage, you don't have to worry about that one anymore.
You know, I'm starting to see even better what you're talking about. I mean, you know, what you're talking about is hard for a person that doesn't know to grasp. But if they listen and pay attention, slowly it starts coming together. I was wondering, why plasma? Why are you trying to do plasma? And it dawns on me now, as we're sitting here talking right now, it dawns on me. Plasma, it's almost no energy, no effort to make light.
Yep.
Well, you turn right around, you use the light on a solar cell.
That's what's going on inside the fluorescent bulb. You're energizing that gas inside the fluorescent bulb. There are tungsten elements inside your average fluorescent bulb, and that's usually what goes bad, why they won't work in the standard system. However, that gas is still in there, and with high voltage, the frequency wave that's coming in through there is still energizing the gas inside that bulb. And so you can still light up even one that won't work in your standard electrical appliances. You can still light it up with high voltage, high frequency. And so with that said, light is heat, heat is light, vice versa. So with plasma, all we're talking about doing is changing it from a gas to the fourth state of matter. And when you do that, you create friction inside there and pressure, which in turn creates heat and light at the same time. And like I said, with the different colors of the noble gases, now you can get just different colored light bulbs. You don't even have to do nothing but change the gas in it, and you can go from red to blue to purple or whatever, you know.
Which gas gives pure white light?
Xenon, I think.
Okay.
Xenon.
Real close to 50 fluorescent lights. I've got some fat ones, but I've got a whole lot of the newer ones. And now the newer ones, some of them will burn like almost an amber color, and some of them burn like a rosy light pink. And I've got a few that burn pure white. And those are the ones that I want to collect and use on the solar panel.
Well, here's a concept for you. Let me see if I can get to this deal right here. Imagine if you had a combination fluorescent / LED style light bulb, to where you're not only getting the gas excited, but you're also getting visible light off of the LEDs. I mean, they have some super bright LED technology out there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, helium kind of gives you like an orange color. Neon kind of gives you a red color. Argon, a purple. Krypton, kind of a bluish color. And xenon gives you white. Xenon. There's xenon. Yeah, that's how it is. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different light spectrums right there.
Hmm.
So with that said, you know, hey, if you want your light to be purdy or whatever. But so now we've changed that energy without any effort whatsoever. If you're just taking the high voltage, and you'll note that I did a video a while back, must see. And there was one prior to that, but you see me light up using a hard drive motor, just a computer hard drive motor, and then the latest one was spinning a hard drive motor with a hard drive motor. And it was lighting up these strands of LEDs. But also showed at one point in that video where I only had one wire connected to those LEDs, and their while they weren't as bright as they would be if there was a return path back, they were still lit up. You see my point here?
Yes, I do.
And so off of a single wire system, you can still get visible light off of that with using that LED technology. And so the more that you can reduce any electron flow back into the generator head, the less back EMF that's going to occur. And so the less back EMF that's going to occur, then the easier that generator is going to be able to function. And so we've stopped the back EMF from the generator head all the way back to the prime mover. What more do you need? You just take that energy and you change it to a different energy, heat and light, and you move it away from, and you use that heat to change the energy back into usable current on the other side, such as Peltier elements. The newer LED systems that they got, I showed it to you when you was down here. Remember the little square LED?
Yes, and I'm going to tell you something. I just ordered... They're coming in about 2 more weeks.
Now, if you have that hooked to a battery, like a 9-volt battery, that thing is super bright. And it actually produces a lot of heat. But you can light that same exact LED up without the battery. You can light it up with high voltage. Because the only thing that the material inside there is looking for is the electron interaction with the material, all right? And so it will release photons anytime electrons interact with it. So all you're doing is sending the electrons through. It doesn't even have to be, like I said, that's why I don't care about current watts and amps at this point. All it is doing is having an interaction as that flow comes by, all right? And so... you're going to get just as much light out of that LED as you would be as if you had it on a dead short onto a battery, with exception is now you're not going to get the heat portion of it on the LED side of it. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So imagine if you used high voltage and a huge panel of these LEDs and basically had them sandwiched to solar panel like you're talking about.
Right.
All right, so now you're transferring that heat across, or the light across to the doggone solar panel. You're transferring that energy from light to energy that the solar panel now recognizes and gives you electricity. Now, if the little square LEDs, even at high voltage, will begin to produce heat. On the opposite side, you could attach a Peltier element and drag that heat off in another direction in another form of electricity.
Yep.
So there you go, man. And, you know, with all this done, at no time did we ever allow Lenz's law to take effect, because we're not allowing the electron flow back into the generator. We know that we can get energy off of one leg of the generator because we've done it.
Yep. Yeah, we've definitely done that.
Yep.
Oh, man. I feel like a kid locked in a candy store for the weekend.
Well, it's exciting, you know, and in some sense it can be a bit frustrating because, you know, like you said, I've been trying to tell people this for a long time, and that's why I'm interested in the plasma. Plasma's got so many different capabilities, it's mind-boggling. You can actually use plasma to, you know, speed up, slow down, and change the frequency range. So, you know, the difference between a spark gap, you know, a short spark gap's obviously going to fire faster than a wider spark gap. So in that sense, you change the frequency by just jumping that gap and having it at different rates. You know, they talk about tuning Tesla coils all the time, but, you know, then when I say something like that, it's like, duh, you don't know what you're talking about. Really? The faster the wave comes in, the higher the frequency, right?
You just said a mouthful when you said people look at you when you say that and they say, duh, you don't know what you're talking about. The thing is, what they don't realize is they don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's just...
They're not being quiet. They're not listening to you long enough to realize they don't understand what you're talking about. I do. I understand exactly what you're talking about now.
You know that back EMF's going to make your alternator in your car work harder. All right? So that's going to cost you more gas. All right? So if you take your alternator and modify it to where it's just using the energy that's being generated out there without allowing the electron flow back into the alternator, now you still have the same amount of energy, because according to the laws of physics, the conservation of energy, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So, you know, it's still there. It's just not in the form you like it, you know? So change it back to something you like, and then use that to charge your battery. You see what I'm saying? And you won't have to, because I don't know how many horsepower, somebody calculated at one time of how much horsepower you could actually lose just with the alternator alone, because it actually bogs the engine down. You can hear it when you turn your air conditioner on, you turn your lights on. You can even watch the lights in your dash dim down every time you hit something, you know, and it bogs down even further. So what happens if it's freewheeling in there and never bogs down?
Right. And again, voltage is easy.
Yep.
It's very easy to make high voltage. It's the average that takes the work. But in high voltage, you also have average. In high voltage, you can transfer it longer distances.
I had a guy that made a comment on one of my videos here recently about, I'm going to have to find that comment and just read it, but basically he made a comment on one of my videos about, you know, he would like to see more measurements out of my videos, you know. And what I kept trying to explain to everybody, I guess somewhere along the line he missed it, because when I talk about free energy, immediately they're all talking about, you know, running your house. You know, they're all talking about current watts and amps and all this kind of stuff there. Well, I tried to tell them, and I've been trying to tell them, that I don't care about all that right now. All I'm looking for is strictly voltage. And to me, if you can take a hard drive motor and get 450 volts AC out of a hard drive motor, they're telling me two things there. First off, I can get all the voltage that I want. Easy. All right?
I'll tell you what. With your permission, within 2 weeks, I want to come back up there, and I'm bringing a lot of stuff with me. A lot. I'm going to bring a 20 million volt generator, and I'm going to bring a 89 million volt generator. Now, the thing is, people want you to measure this stuff. I got news for you. I can't find a multimeter that'll read over 5,000 or 6,000 volts.
Well, here's the key, because when they talked about measuring the stuff, and they said my voltmeter ain't good enough, I need a better voltmeter, and I need to measure this, and I need to measure that. My voltmeter's fine. I mean, that's all I'm looking for. I'm not looking for current watts and amps at this point. I'm looking for voltage, strictly voltage alone. And the reason why I've been looking for voltage alone is why I keep explaining that voltage is pressure. All right, and it's also frequency. You know, the higher the voltage, the higher the frequency. It's blatantly obvious. The more voltage you got coming in, the more pressure is behind it. And so, let me see. I've got to find this doggone comment, man. This is really good, because I'll have my response.
You keep saying you're not interested in voltage, watts, and amps. But the thing is, you don't say that. You end it by saying right now, and people don't listen to you. You are interested in volts, amps, but not right now. Right now, you're interested in what we can do with the voltage.
Okay, here's the comment.
Before you can walk, you gotta walk before you can run. It's just that simple.
Yeah, here's the comment. Okay, a man out there, I won't say his name, I'll just read it out. He said, okay, what exactly are you trying to prove? You have me completely lost at that. Do you somehow think that you are getting more energy out than in? And that's where one of my friends out here in the alternative energy community was wrong, because they just missed the whole point. And what is the must-see aspect of this? If you really wanted to show a little more, you should first get a better multimeter. also show current consumption and multiple points. Voltage without current is just about useless. Wrong. Also, why not use frequency counter to show some measurement since you probably don't have access to an oscilloscope? Overall, though, I haven't seen you do anything that would qualify as new or anything that doesn't have horrible losses. Furthermore, by your explanation in this video, I'm almost entirely sure you have I'm not entirely sure you have a full understanding of capacitors and even how you measure in the circuit isn't the correct way to do such. For now, I'm not going to diss your ideas on somehow obtaining free energy, but I'd enjoy your videos more if you would take more measurements other than voltage alone and multiple places within the circuit. If you need something other than Il Cheapo Multimeter, I'm sure that you have enough viewers that one may donate. Overall, messing electronics is fun. Anyway, so I replied.
I agree with him in that you've got a lot of listeners out there. Then one or two of them need to get together, if they really truly believe, and help you and me find somewhere to obtain a multimeter that will read up into the billions of volts.
All right, listen.
We're going.
Listen, I replied to him, and maybe it sounds kind of harsh, but I said, you seem to be wasting your time watching my videos because you haven't seemed to grasp the concept of the fact I am only looking for voltage.
Right.
When you begin to understand why, maybe then you will stop overthinking the simple. Voltage is pressure. Try looking into static energy and how it reacts with noble gases and different materials. Until I move energy from one place to the next, none of your measurements apply. Only when I draw a load will it matter. The simple of what is happening inside this hard drive motor is what you should be focused on. And overthinking the simple and not understanding what is being pointed out tells me that you have missed the big picture. That's what I said. What are you doing? I think you're cleaning out your drawer over there or something.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, that's what I said. Because what I'm trying to tell people is, look, I don't care about current. I don't care about watts. I don't care about amps. Because at this point, all your current, all your watts, all your amps equal back EMF.
Clarify something. He said right now, folks, he's not interested in all that other garbage right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's coming. He said that. Are you listening?
There will be a time for that to apply. But at this point in the game, the current watts and amps don't apply at this point in the game because I'm not looking to try to run a load. When I get the energy moved from point A to point B, and the reason why I like the voltage is because voltage is pressure. The higher the voltage, the higher the pressure, the faster you can move something. It's like putting your thumb on the garden hose. All right, when you got the garden hose out there and you just got it turned on, the water, there's a lot of volume of water coming out. But you put your thumb over that hose, that water not only comes out faster, harder, but farther. So I can take that high voltage energy and I can move it rapidly from point A to point B at an alarming rate. And by the time it gets to the other side, I need to start stepping this down. When I start stepping it down using capacitor banks or batteries, now you can tell me I got to have the voltmeter on there. At that time, I will have the voltmeter on there because now it applies. Because now you are going to be actually drawing a load from it.
Hold on a minute, folks. He said it at this time, we're not interested. He or I are not interested in watts, amps, whatever. We're interested in voltage at this time.
That's right.
When we get this thing perfected, where we know what we're doing, then we can start working for the amps and the watts and the this and the that. Like I said earlier in this show, I let five fluorescent, 4-foot fluorescent light bulbs at 20 feet of light, 20 feet long, giving off by my eyeballs more than 40 watts of incandescent light. And I was burning 1/10 of 1 watt of electricity. 1/10 of a watt. That means that it roughly, I haven't tried it yet, but that means basically that if I had 50 light bulbs, I'd be burning 1 watt. But 50 bulbs would be giving me 10 times as much light as I had.
Well,
we're 40 watts of incandescent light.
And the thing is, if you're changing the energy from the form that's actually coming out, the AC current that's actually coming out of the generator head, if you're changing it to light or heat, and you're not allowing any electron flow back into the generator head, then the generator head won't slow down. Do you understand what I'm trying to say here? You still there? Apparently I lost him. So, anyway, folks, look. I ain't trying to be mean or rude to anybody out there. I'm just trying to tell you folks, that the ones that keep getting upset about me, because, you know, I understand. In electrical world, you got to have current, watts, and amps in order to do everything. And it's at the smallest level, I still probably got a lot of that going on inside there. But it's not at the extreme, and it's not even significant at this point. All I want is high voltage, because I want the pressure, I want the speed, and I want to be able to move energy from one point to the next. Same concept of what I just said about putting your finger over the garden hose. I'm going to build that pressure up. I'm going to send that energy down the line. I'm going to change that energy to a form that generator head can't recognize, so that there's no potential. That's what the mercury arc rectifier did. You think that whenever they put that mercury arc rectifier on their generator, that it caused back EMF down to that line? It did right out of the gate, because as soon as that mercury, that high voltage AC hit that doggone, that mercury, which is liquid metal, you created a dead short. That's what created the heat, which in turn vaporized the mercury into a gas. Now, the longer you ran that thing, when now this is no longer a liquid, the less conductive that you have back to the load, so the less that generator had to work in order to keep pumping that high voltage AC in there. When it finally got into the plasma state, it was almost as if it didn't even have a load on it anymore. However, the high voltage AC is still going in there. It's still creating more pressure in the form of plasma, and the electrons could only flow in one direction, and you took what was normally a liquid metal, and you made a conductor out of it and pressurized that chamber so that the electrons could only flow in one direction, and now you had DC, high voltage DC coming out the other side. It was rectified.
Yep.
That's my point. Now, if you start off and you don't have that dead short from the get-go, you just use gas inside there, such as argon gas, you can still get the same exact results. At 450 volts AC, you and I were getting plasma. You saw it with your own two eyes.
Yes, I did.
And so, with that said, that energy's inside that bulb. Is it ready to run what it is that we need to run? No, but it is the next step in the stages that we're talking about, taking that energy, changing the form of the energy so that the generator head can't recognize it in the form of back EMF, and moving that energy away from the generator system, and then changing that energy back into usable current again. They do it wirelessly all the time with Tesla coils, and then they look at me with cross eyes because I'm saying the same thing, just trying to explain it in a different way. You know, if you send wireless energy from one Tesla coil to the next Tesla coil, what have you done? You just took the high voltage coming off the Tesla coil, changed it into a frequency wave that then expanded out and then was picked up by a receiver and then recombined back through the system as a step down, and basically ran something off of it on the other side. It's no different than what I'm saying. We're just doing it in a tube.
Yep.
So anyway, let's say we take a music break and get some fresh coffee and come back and hit it again. What do you think?
I love it.
All right, everybody, you're listening to Mad Science, so stay tuned. Peace and love, everybody.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
21 gigawatts!
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission.
To explore strange new worlds. To seek out new life and new civilizations. To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. A field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look.
crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
21 gigawatt.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Mad Science. Got Raymond on there. We're trying to get my buddy Steven here, too. And so with that said, we're talking about energy transfer. Now, well, we were kind of having a brief conversation about lights and stuff like that, on the break there. But imagine a full spectrum with all the different spectrums of light built into one single panel. See, the LED technology that we have access to today is amazing. All right, you can see by the brightness of these LEDs that they've got going on and the efficiency of these LEDs and so on and so forth. So in order to be able to reduce any back EMF going to back into the generator head itself, then we need to be able to change that energy to some form or another. And like I was saying, I took that X13 and I was able to run a what would normally run off 120 volts AC that is an LED system. It's like a Christmas bulb, right? It's got three little LEDs inside there. And I was able to run that without creating near the amount of back EMF. And that was directly coupled to the generator head. Now, the tungsten element did the large 150-watt tungsten element, when the RPMs was up, it ran fine. I mean, it basically allowed the electrons to flow back into the generator head, which therefore created the back EMF. But when I went down to a smaller element, man, burn it. I'm trying to talk here. All right, now I got to add somebody else to the call. All right, let me get some people in here. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is that if you make sure that the energy, which we already know, we can run it off of a one-wire system. So we know that we can get light out of a one-wire system. And then, got it. they're killing me. I got three people trying to get in here. I'm going to try to add them all in one shot. All right. So, talk for a minute, Raymond.
What are we talking about? All right. The thing is, folks, I'm not an electronic person, and Shazin is trying to get other people to call. So, I don't know the proper questions to ask. So, I just, most of the time when I'm with Shazin in person, I just keep quiet and listen to it and realize he knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's talking about. So I need to listen and understand. If you think he's doing something wrong, then you're not listening to him. You're second guessing.
Well, I'm not trying to tell people that they're wrong in how they understand electricity. I've never tried to tell them they're wrong in how they understand electricity.
Have you ever suggested that they were wrong? You're just simply suggesting a different way to look at things, a different angle to look at it.
Yeah, I'm basically saying that it's how we use the electricity that I don't agree with. All right, there's an easier way to use what it is that we're trying to do. You know, a more efficient way, such as, like, let's start off to the basic simple. What I just said earlier about how the prime mover, which is the fan in that X13 fun video that I did, the prime mover, which is, it was a mulcher for leaves, all right? And it is not directly coupled to the generator head. So even when the generator head got put underneath a load, then it it still didn't slow down the prime mover. The prime mover was, it just moved at its normal speed. You see what I'm saying?
What you're trying to say is that you're looking at how using electricity in a different manner. And it reminded me of when I was a young man doing sheet metal work. I had a really older guy. I mean, this guy had years and years of experience. And I was trying to do something. And I was using a hammer and I was hitting it. I can't remember exactly what it was. And he said, "Boy, what do you think the size of the hammer is for? Just to hold the two ends together?"
Who do we got in here so far?
Huh?
Who do we got in here so far?
That's it.
I added Muddy. And I added Steve.
Just you and me so far.
But yeah.
The thing is, I said it once, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And the sides of a hammer are not just to hold the two ends together. You can use the sides. I mean, what Shaziz is trying to say is he's trying to look at using electricity in a different way to accomplish the same thing, but easier. That's all.
I think these guys are all basically not in the right room to pick up the call. Let me end this call and try this again.
All right.
All right, call you right back. Hello, you're live on air. That's one of you. Now let's see if we can get the other ones in there.
Hey, Justin.
Morning.
Now we got get. Now I got to see if I can add Muddy in.
Hey, Steve, how you doing?
How you doing, Ray? How you doing, Justin? Is it, everybody good?
Yep, everybody. We're live on air, so you know it's radio time.
Seeing as I'm your unelected web guru, not that I've got great skills, I would like to point out to people on Awake that currently it seems there's an issue with Chatango on the Shaziz.com radio site. I've checked the Chatango chat box on the US Awake radio site as well. So if anybody's struggling to get in to put in their 2 cents worth, I would recommend they go to madsciencesshaziz.chatango.com or go to the shazizradio.com website and you can have a little chat with us there.
It seems to be working fine for me.
I can't connect, so maybe my particular dictatorship in Asia that I'm currently living in has blocked it.
Yeah, maybe they don't like me.
I can get to you fine. Maybe Awake have said something they don't like.
Did we get Muddy in here yet?
He was in here for a little bit and he dropped out.
Yeah, must be that Honest Abe's used ISP again. Anyway, what we're talking about today is energy transfer, alright? We're talking about a method by which to not allow Lenz's law to ever even come into play. Now, see, okay, first off, I got to tell you, I'm going to say it a few times that I don't care about current watts and amps, all right? Now, that gets everybody in an uproar. But what I'm trying to say is that when you build a puzzle or a model or whatever, there's a certain stage where certain things don't apply. Right now, this stage in the game, what I'm talking about, current watts and amps don't apply. Now, is there some sort of minuscule amount of what current watts and amps? I'm sure there probably is, all right? But at that point in matter, at this point in the game, I don't care, because all I'm looking for at this point is high voltage, because voltage gives me speed and pressure. That's all I want right now, because I want to take the energy from the generator head into a totally different state, into the fourth state of matter, all right? So that now that it the generator head doesn't recognize that form of energy. There's no electron flow back into the generator, therefore no back EMF being created at this point. So for the first stage of the deal, we talked about the X13 in the blower motor that I was using in order to turn a squirrel cage fan, which in turn was turning the X13. So between the X13 and the prime mover, which was the fan motor, there was absolutely no potential for coupling to that point. So the motor, even when the generator head was under a load such as the tungsten element and the back EMF was occurring, slowing down the squirrel cage fan, The prime mover never even slowed down in the least, so there was no load being transferred from the generator head to the prime mover, which then in turn, like you and I had, Raymond, out here, whenever we put the load on it, it literally broke the circuit, you know?
Yes.
It tripped the breaker. And so now we're to the point where we got the prime mover being the fan, we got the generator head being the generation source, and now we want to move that energy to the next stage of the game so that we are not drawing a direct load back to the generator. See, the only way Lenz's law can come into effect of where back EMF is going to occur is when those electrons are allowed to make the completed circuit back around there. See, when they Lenz's law, based off of Faraday's law, came into play, they were taking their measurements, like such as that, you know, when you induce a current in a magnetic field, that an opposite current is instantaneously created, which is a counteracting force on the initial force. Well, what they didn't understand that is that the energy that they were trying to use was actually making a return path back into the same exact system, creating a second field, an opposing field. So now you had a situation where nature's trying to balance itself out, and in that process it slows the generator down. That's why everybody out there can't figure out how to defeat Lenz's law, because it's, if you have the electrons being able to go back into the same generator, you're trying to push the energy out one direction, then you're also sending energy back in. Since it's copper wire, and you know, you can either run a motor as a generator, or you can run a motor as a motor. By putting energy in, you create a field that will turn the rotor, or by drawing energy out, vice versa. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so I don't want to allow that second portion to happen. So what I'm talking about doing, and what I have been doing, is taking and using plasma to bring it into the plasma state. Now, the pressure that is created in the plasma is not allowing the energy to be able to flow back into it. When I talked about the mercury arc rectifier, the initial firing up of the mercury arc rectifier, I'm sure as soon as they hit that, that generator just almost dropped to the floor, because, you know, it's a heck of a dead short. But that dead short literally created enough heat to basically take the mercury from a liquid to a gas. And since since now it's into the gas state and the energy's still coming in, it stepped it up to the next stage, which is now plasma. And the longer that generator put the energy into it, the easier that generator had, when the farther it got away from the direct short, which would be the pool of mercury, to the gas state. And now the longer it ran, the easier it got. You see what I'm saying?
Yep, I do.
So you're going to move the energy away. You can move it in the form of heat, or you can move it in the form of light. All right. Does anybody disagree that heat and light, as it's basically explained, is different than the high voltage AC coming out? It's not the same frequency. It's actually a different frequency range.
Yep.
So I want to be able to move it to a different form of energy, then send it on down the line. And when we get to the point where we're actually going to try to reuse this energy, now then you throw the calculator in there.
All right.
So that's what I'm talking about. Moving energy from point A to point B. And using modern day LED technology, they have infrared technology, they have all different colors of light spectrum technology. Could you imagine if you had the perfect panel that had all the spectrums of the light that are possible using LED technology, and then had that sandwiched with your solar panel?
There you go. Now you're talking. They're building solar panels to use visible light, but we can only see 10% of the actual total light spectrum. So if we build a solar panel that can take the other 90% and produce electricity with it, then your solar panels are going to be able, the same solar panel size, be able to put out 10 times as much electricity. I see exactly where you're going.
Yeah, and so as far as LED technology, you can try it. Go get your whole strand of LED LED strands or whatever, and you can run high voltage through there. All right, as long as you're not pumping a whole lot of current and all that to that thing, you're not going to burn those LEDs out. I mean, you can do it wirelessly. I've done it. I mean, you can hold them up in the air around a Tesla coil or even a Slayer exciter. The frequency range is enough to cause the interaction between the electrons and release photons of light. So there you go. That's what I'm talking about. So if you have, let's say you had two strands coming out the back of that generator, you're going to take that energy from what would have been just the AC current, and you're going to put it into the form of a light. All right, and like I said, even if back EMF even makes it back, I told you about the thicker the tungsten element, the more current can flow back into the generator head, and the harder that generator head has to work. The thinner the tungsten, the you get more light and less back EMF. When you get down to the LED, you get just as much light and even less back EMF. You see what I'm saying? The less that energy can be allowed to flow back into that generator head, the less it has to work. And so, if you create generate a massive amount of high voltage, you got more power there than you need to run your stuff on the other side. You just need to be able to take that energy and put it back into usable energy and step it back down to where you want it, and then run your stuff.
Which it is?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I had to interrupt there, mate. LED lights have a, how can I put this politely, a low light, lumens output. I'm sorry, mate, but they do not do what high energy bulbs can do.
There's,
and this is coming from the commercial perspective as well, where I've worked in greenhouses where they've used LED lighting, and eventually they reverted to high pressure sodium and metal halide because they do not produce the light spectrum at distance.
Yeah, well, we're not even looking for distance. What we're looking for is a sandwich material such as that light laying right on top of a solar panel. I'm talking about building a unit that is the only purpose that it is a energy transfer from one to the next. It's not going to be to light up your entire neighborhood. It's just going to be able to take that energy from one frequency and put it into another frequency. You see what
can
I'm saying?
Can I put the big box that I built?
Light up a thousand.
Do what now?
How do you take a Tesla coil and light up a 1,000-watt light bulb then?
By having the range.
If you're doing high voltage with on a small scale, how do you do it on a large scale with a small instrument?
By using the frequency range to vibrate the tungsten element. Everything has a resonant frequency, you know.
But we know it needs the amperage behind it. If you take capacitance, which is really just mass, and you oscillate it, vibrate it, agitate it, that's amperage. All you need is a little bit of voltage, just like in your experiments that you do. You're like, what's going on here with all these capacitors and a little 9-volt battery? That 9-volt is really frequency. It's tapping on the big jug of water, and that big jug of water is going into turbulence. It'll fall over.
Justin, the traditional ballast, either a digital or magnetic ballast that's used to control horticultural lights, is a Tesla coil.
Yeah. With capacitors, they're in parallel with each other, and they're pulsating back and forth.
So
like what they're trying to do is very specifically control the amount of watts, amps, and the rest of it that goes into your bulb to make sure that filament vibrates at the right frequency. And I think Shaziz is onto something here, where he can say that he can produce oodles and oodles of frequency, but then run it through a system that's going to control it specifically to the exact cause that he wants to effect.
That's
exactly what he's after.
That's what I've been trying to say. And I know, I understand the way that everybody thinks and how the book says it all be done. But what I'm suggesting here is, instead of trying to do what we've already been done, we know Lenz's law works. I mean, Lenz's law does happen. When you create when you induce a current into a copper wire coil, then you actually create a second field that is a counteracting force. It's nature trying to balance itself out. So since we know that that's going to happen, then let's find a way to not allow that to happen and move that energy that's coming out of it, because that energy is going to come out of it whether you like it or not. And as soon as you stick your finger over there, you'll find out the hard way that, yeah, it's going to find a place to go. You're going to go right into your finger. Like, yeah, make your eyes crooked.
Do you know what the latest innovation is in horticultural bulbs?
What's that?
Plasma.
Yeah, there you go. Raymond's experiment proves what I'm talking about, because Raymond's did the experiment to measure the watts, and he had the actual equipment to do it. All right, so he was able to put one bulb on there. It cost him higher watts. The more bulbs he added to it, the lower the watts went. The usage of the watts went. You see what I'm saying?
The actual wattage went up, but it dropped per bulb.
Yeah.
I mean, that just, to me, was totally phenomenal. I mean, the more bulbs I put on, the more watts I use, but the fewer watts per bulb. I mean, it doesn't make sense, but it was there. Like you said, I had the proper equipment to do it and measure, and it's there.
All right, so basically what I'm saying is, let's just speak hypothetically, because of what I'm trying to talk about to everybody. You got this magic box, right? And it can completely stop Lenz's effect as far as the generator back EMF bogging down, all right? So you got this box, and only thing this box is doing is keeping energy from flowing back into the generator head. That's its only purpose, is just to keep that energy going in one direction, kind of like a diode, And so there's no way that the energy can go back in there and create the other field, so the generator head is essentially freewheeling at this point, all right? Now, when you get on the other side over there, where now this energy coming out, it will not run your light bulbs. It won't run your doggone... Well, it'll probably run your LEDs and your fluorescents. But might even run your tungsten, depending on what frequency it is. So, that was a bad example. It won't run your electric motor or your refrigerator. All right, because it's at the wrong range. It's not the same frequency that it takes to run your refrigerator or heavy appliances. So now we got to take that energy and put it into something that will be able to use it. So now we can go from either capacitors to batteries to inverters, and then that we're back to where we need it. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. In other words, you can't get there from here.
Yeah.
So we got to start over there.
So I'm just basically making that magic box in the middle, which is the plasma reactor, which is the mercury arc rectifier, that is going to take the energy and change the frequency long enough. Now, there are multiple ways to do this. One is using argon gas, and the other one, another one is to take LED technology, and instead of transferring that energy through the gas, you're now letting the high voltage actually make the loop back in, or even not make the loop back in, and ground it on with two separate grounds off the generator to the dirt, so that your LEDs are at their brightest. All right, and you'll notice that if you have a LED out by a Tesla coil, that while you got your finger on it, it will actually light that bulb up. All right, you can just hold it out there in the air, and it'll light it up. You are the ground at that point. You see what I mean? And so with the third method is to take and transfer that. We talked about transferring it via light, and we also can transfer it via heat. Imagine a rectifier tube that actually had a coil of tubing through it that you could circulate water in there and pull heat out off of that plasma, and then take that heated water downstream and then use Peltier elements to take and transfer that heat back into electricity again. Does it make any sense to anybody but me?
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same page there, mate.
You're making a lot of sense to me. A lot of sense.
Well, if you do it that way, then you're not actually allowing, like, taking the energy off the plasma in the form of heat and moving it down the road and then turning it back into usable current using Peltier elements. You're not allowing electron flow back in there because the heat isn't the same energy that is generated inside there. It's not going to go back. The heat is not going to go back in and run the generator, if you understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different frequency range, just like light. You're not going to be able to run that generator head like a motor off of light. So all we did was change the energy to an energy that will not be recognized. Thus forth, Lenz's law does not apply in this manner because the energy is not able to make a return path. All you're doing is taking the energy that is created by the magnets flying past the coils of wire and sending it on down the line.
Basically, what you're trying to say is you're trying to use the third law of the conservation of energy. Third law is, you can change its size, shape, form, and or direction.
Bingo! So I'm not even trying to attempt to defy any laws of physics. I'm just trying to use the laws of physics. If I know that if I put my foot on the brake that the car will stop, and I don't want to stop, then I don't put my foot on the brake.
And if you want to slow down, you don't jam it to the floor.
Yeah.
Ease it on. If you can't get there from here, start somewhere else.
So we know that high voltage can literally light up LEDs. So if you have high voltage going through and lighting up your house that is not in a range that's going to run your refrigerator, because it's not the current watts and amps that you need for your standard refrigerator.
Then change its size, shape, form, and or direction.
Just yeah, change. Exactly. Step it down. Put it back into what you need it. And so they use capacitors all the time to smooth out the current flow. They use capacitors in motors. If you ever notice that there's a big motor that has to pull a heavy load, that it has a capacitor on it, that's because that capacitor is like a kick in the butt, you know? That's what gets the motor started. Otherwise, you'd have to get over there and hand crank it started to get it going.
Uh-huh. Been there, done that.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of motors that have a warning label on there that says allow 5 minutes after you shut this thing off before you mess with it, because that capacitor is holding a charge.
Actually, the X13 on the back of the motor has that very label.
Well, there you go. See? I'm not as stupid as I look. I mean, I got wild hair, but come on, man. That's mad science. But, you know, that's it. Energy transfer. So, you know, it's basically, it's what it is, man. And Muddy's actual flux wind turbine, you know, and there could be some things that he could do that to literally generate a lot of high voltage. And imagine if he had that same wind turbine that had a flywheel system on there. That, you know, when the centrifugal force got up to speed, you got a weighted flywheel that even when the wind stops, it actually continues to turn that blade for some time. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
So we know all these different laws of physics. We know what they do. And we know now the key is to take these things that we know are going to happen and use them. I mean, they use back EMF for regenerative braking, you know? If they want to stop the car, you short it out. Muddy was telling me about how, you know, when he wanted to stop the blades on his turbine, all he did is short the wires together.
Right.
And isn't that amazing? that you can take a electric motor, try it, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Take an electric motor that is not even plugged in whatsoever. It's just sitting next to a magnetic rotor, all right? And short those two wires out, and then try to turn that rotor. All right, you're going to notice it locks down.
Yep.
And how's that happening? Anybody got any ideas?
It's like you said, it's trying to go back into itself.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
This is my plan for the future to save the planet. You see the variety of different wind turbines. You've got vertical, you've got horizontal. How about every administrative parliament or congress or anything like that in the world, we stick these things in the rafters of their meeting halls, and all that hot air will make it be spinning so fast we can probably travel to the other side of the galaxy.
Well, there's all kinds of possibilities, man. I don't overlook anything. And you know, so with that said, we're all in this to try to find some clean, renewable energy that people can use to run their inefficient junk that they got today. And so all I'm suggesting to everybody out there is let's just do it in a slightly different manner than we did it before. What do you guys think?
I think that you can make anything impossible by simply removing all possibilities. You can make that physically possible simply by injecting one minute possibility. That's my philosophy.
Well, basically, you can sense frustration every time I try to talk to people about this kind of stuff, you know? Because I'm not in a hurry to get to the other side to where we're actually running the doggone generator portion, because I know how to do it. It's as simple as changing the energy back from one point to the next. Because under their own laws of physics, you just read it out a little while ago, that you can change the form of energy. You know this because you can change frequencies. You can speed something up and slow it down, and that's how a radio transmitter works, you know? The dots and dashes, the ones and zeros in your computer, it's just different frequency ranges. The only thing that is going on inside your computer is you got plumbing going on. You got check valves, you got gates valves, positive displacement pumps, you got big pipes, little pipes, and all it's doing is raising and lowering the pressure and changing the frequency throughout that entire deal. There's so much going on inside a computer, it ain't even remotely funny. You see what I mean? Yeah.
I came across a website the other day, and it kind of showed me where the world was going, because there was a whole argument of 20 pages of comments of which type of camera flash Kim Kardashian's butt would look better under. What was the energy supply to the flash? What was the amount of lumens, the output? Was it a TTL through the lens, or was it a direct metering system? And I thought, God, you people have got nothing better to do, have you?
Well, you know, the best light that I would look good in is dark light.
Oh, yeah. I'm there with you, mate. I'm gonna pay for radio.
So, what do you
have a point where there's interesting and important things that we should be talking about?
Yeah,
but we're constantly misdirected into things that are irrelevant. Now, I'm not saying that the Kardashian family are irrelevant. They have a place in society, and they have every right to be there. But we've more pressing issues.
Yep. So, Justin, I know your brain's just a ticking away over there. What are you thinking about, man? Did we lose Justin?
No, he's still on the air, but I think he went to the other room to do something.
Oh, okay. Well, what about Muddy? Muddy, you around? No microphone? Wake him up, man.
Muddy's nocturnal. He's probably like sitting there in front of the
computer. He's got his eyes open, but he's snoring, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
I'm thinking about going down to Granbury, where Scott lives.
Yeah.
Check on some of my property down there. But I'm going to get hold of him and discuss him building me a special antenna. When it comes to designing and building antennas, Buddy is top of the line genius.
Well, see, there's another thing. The Tesla technology out there, all these people out there say, I don't understand how Tesla coils work. And, well, they couldn't be further from the truth. They don't understand that there is nothing special about a Tesla coil outside of the way that it actually pumps up the power. All right, it's a transmitter, it's a receiver, it's either or. If you have two identical transmitters, you can transmit from one side and you can pick up that energy on the other side and you can do things with it. You see what I'm saying? It's radio, man.
You know,
it is.
Yeah.
I went to Australia in 2011, and when I came home, I had a swimming pool in my living room because there was a leak from a pipe above.
Huh. That stinks.
There was a guy that came to refit all of the light fittings in my living room ceiling. And I asked him, you ever heard of a guy called Nikola Tesla? And he said, who's that?
Yeah. Isn't that a shame?
I actually showed him the door, rang his boss, and asked him to send somebody that knew something about electricity. Because I'll tell you what, if you're a qualified electrician, and you've never heard of Tesla, you're not welcome in my home.
Yeah, I feel the same way, man. I mean,
I don't care what bits of paper a bunch of people have charged you for a course on. If you've never heard of Tesla, then, you know, you're not safe to work in my home.
You know, that's something that they should have been teaching in school all along. We probably wouldn't be having this conversation right now had they had taught that in school, you know? Because people would understand that there's more than one way to use energy.
Yep.
But, you know, I'm not trying to be controversial. I'm just trying to point out to everybody that if you know something's going to happen and it's something you're trying to get around, then why not make sure that it never occurs to begin with? Lenz's law is Lenz's law. I mean, that's exactly what goes on. It creates a second field, and that second field is obnoxious because it's slowing down what you're trying to accomplish. So take that energy that has been generated, move it out of the way, use it, don't have a direct load back to the source, and then you don't have Lenz's law. Does anybody think I'm wrong about that?
Nope, I don't.
Well, you know, it's like the same example of the generator head as opposed to the prime mover that was the weed eater mulcher that I used as a blower fan to turn the squirrel cage. There is absolutely no direct connection between the two. It's just one's blowing out wind and the other one's picking up the wind and spinning it. When the one slows down, it don't change the wind. The wind's still going through there just as hard as it was before, and the motor doesn't bog down it at all. So there's the first step that shows what I'm talking about is true. Because you're not. Remember, Raymond, when you were out here, and every time we had the little plasma bulb going in, and every time that plasma would heat up that little thermal switch inside there and make that circuit, the incandescent light bulb would come on real bright, and then it bogged that doggone generator head down. But as long as it was in the plasma state, that generator head didn't bog down at all.
Not at all. That was the amazing thing to me. I mean, it was heating up, producing plasma, getting brighter and brighter and brighter, and the motor, there was no drag on it whatsoever.
But then,
when it got to a certain temperature and closed the circuit to light up the other light bulb, the incandescent bulb, yes, bam, all of a sudden, there, it just choked it right down.
Yep, because now that energy had a direct path back into the generator head, and there's where the back EMF occurs.
You know, here's this. When I lit up the six large, fat, 4-foot fluorescent lights, the first time I did it, I had no wire going to the ground, and I did not have a return back to the oil igniter. The lights lit. I reached down, and the last light, on the very end of it, I reached down and wrapped my fingers around it. The lights got twice as bright.
Yep.
a watt meter did not increase or decrease one, and yet there was no ground. Yep. In fact, all six bulbs were sitting on a plastic vinyl chair. There was no ground, yet they were lit. And I touched them with my hands. I'm wearing tennis shoes with rubber soles, so I'm insulated, and I'm standing on a wood floor. But my body acted like a ground in the air,
yep,
increasing the current flow, but without, no, not the current flow, helping the voltage go somewhere. The pressure of the voltage going through that gas is what excited the gas and made it illuminate. But, I mean...
So, let's just say... Let's just say, hypothetically, you just do nothing more than light up your house with the technology that we're talking about. Nothing more. That's all you're going to do is just light up your house. How much do you think that it would save on your light bill by taking every single light bulb off the power grid?
Oh, man. Holy cow. You know, I did some calculations, and according to my figures, I could run those five, the second time I did it with the skinny fluorescent bulbs. I could run those five bulbs at their full brightness 24 hours a day for 13.8 months on 11 cents worth of electricity.
Well, there you go, man. And you can do it off of a 12-volt battery. And all you got to do is keep that 12-volt battery charged.
It figures out that a 15-watt solar panel in the sun during the daytime could charge a battery in one day enough to light five fluorescent light bulbs for 13 years.
And then you can use deep cycle batteries so that you, even when those batteries got down, deep cycle batteries are designed so that they'll you can drag them all the way down to 20% of their capacity and they'll still put out a steady flow.
Yes.
That's why they use them in marine batteries. They call them marine batteries. That's why they use them in boats to run their trolling motors, because it stinks to get down to about 3/4 of your battery capacity, and then the motor starts slowing down. With a deep cycle, it don't happen. It'll stay going all the way down to 20%. So you can get back to the dock without having to paddle. And isn't that what we're trying to do, is get to the dock without having to paddle?
Yep, exactly. Like I said, if you can't get there from here, start someplace else.
Yeah. And Steve put a comment in the deal, something about practicality and it comes down to cost. Well, we're talking about this LED technology right now. If you go out and buy LED light bulbs, they're pretty expensive because they're kind of new to the deal. You know, as far as light bulbs go, if you go out and buy, you know, an LED light bulb as opposed to a regular incandescent light bulb or even the energy saver bulb. See, you go from the tungsten element light bulb to the energy saver bulbs and now the modern day LED bulbs. Oh, the price is up there kind of right now because it's new technology. The more people that go out and buy these doggone LED light bulbs, the cheaper they're going to get. And eventually, yep, they'll be cheaper than dirt. And so, if you can take an entire strand of LEDs and light them up with just a high voltage frequency, because it don't take a lot of current watts and amps to light LEDs. You, just the high voltage alone, all it is the interaction between the electron inside the material that they use in the LEDs to release photons of light. That's it. All they have to do is touch each other. They're going to put the light on. And that's why you're able to see that even when I had that thing running at 150 volts out there, that LED was bright. And even when it went all the way down to 40, 50 volts, it was still just as bright. Because it don't take hardly anything to light them things up. So if you had strands of LED lighting all the way through your house run on a one-wire system, you could light your entire house off of this deal and not drain hardly any voltage whatsoever. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
All you're doing is letting it pass through and using the as it goes by to the other side and down into the dirt. You know, the energy wants to go somewhere. It don't care how it gets there. It just wants to get somewhere. And then when it goes off or out to the dirt, and you get the light in between.
I've got one or two, maybe three little experiments to do with the single wire system you have. You showed me when I was up there.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to actually put it to practical use. It's about 30, 35 feet from my office to my house. And it's another 25 or 30 feet from my office to my my laboratory, my shop. So what I'm going to do is I've got some 1/32 cable, galvanized cable, and I'm going to run a cable from my house to my office and from my office to my shop. And I'm going to hang fluorescent lights from them, and I'm going to use that oil burner igniter to light those lights, and I'm going to put it on a motion detector. That's going to show people that it has practical use.
Yep, that's what it is. You know,
I mean, here, folks, we're trying to figure out a way to use this technology to actually do something useful.
Yeah, well, you know, all of it's useful and all of it's practical, because whenever you talk about energy transfer, well, all we're talking about is changing from one range to the next, and it's easily changed back into the other direction. We already know you can charge a capacitor using static electricity alone.
Yes, you can.
They do it with a Van de Graaff, they do it with a Wimshurst, they do it with a Lord Kelvin generator. All you're doing is basically storing energy, and it's just like a bucket, you know. You fill that bucket up and you got a full bucket of water. Same thing. So, voltage is pressure, and high voltage is speed. It's as simple as that. And as far as the other measurements, I'm sorry that I'm not measuring the other ones, because right now the only thing I'm excited about is high voltage, because I know what I can do with high voltage. High voltage, I can get light. High voltage, I can get heat. High voltage, I can literally take and speed it up and slow it down and get different frequency ranges.
Hey, one more thing. With high voltage, you can knock holes and stuff, like forearms.
Yeah. Burn the hair off your hand.
It is.
Yeah.
Do you know what my favorite trick is?
What's that?
I ask people if they think that their electricity bill is reasonable.
Mine ain't.
When they say yes, I rub a balloon on my head and touch their cheek.
Well, see, there you go, man. Now you can get a light. You can get a lightning bolt off of a balloon, man.
Oh yeah.
And I tell you what, and people's like, electricity is not free. Yeah, right. Tell your brother that next time you shock him on the ear.
Really?
It's free. Didn't cost nothing.
We are living in a sea of energy and we're drowning in it.
Yes.
But every effort is being made to make sure that we do not realize that we have practical ways to harness it and use it.
The problem is, the big boys that sell you electricity, they can't put a meter on it.
Yeah.
If they can't put a meter on it, they're not going to work with it.
Well, and that's why a lot of people come out there into the alternative energy community and call you everything under the book to get you discouraged to believe that you can't do something.
Right.
In fairness, if you wanted to wash your clothes in the standard washing machine, you'd be bald by the time you finish rubbing your head with a balloon to provide enough energy to it.
You know, there was a guy that stood out.
Cowboy Billy Baked Beans gives you free energy.
Yeah, there you go.
Put a meter on that. I won't let him.
Oh, that's the true
definition
of brown gas, mate.
Look, there was a guy that stood out on the seashore and noticed that it looked like the doggone boat went over the doggone hill and said that the world could be round. And so he was blasphemy or heretic. Heretic, that's the word. He was a heretic for saying that. Now there's guys and gals out there saying that the earth is flat. I don't care whether the earth is round. I don't care whether the earth is flat. What I do care about is energy. And energy is all around us, regardless. You wouldn't even see that boat going over the hill if it wasn't for energy. Little photons of light hitting the cones in your eye and such. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but
blow the sails and push the boat, it wouldn't go over the edge either.
Yeah, well, you know, so... Either way,
I'm sorry, Shazam, but everybody knows the world is not either flat or round, but it actually travels through space with four elephants standing on the back of a turtle, supporting the disc.
Well, I could buy that one easier than I could be all the rest of the stories, because it just drives me insane. Why sit around and argue whether the earth is flat or the earth is round or whether there is or isn't? You know, I'm just saying, the turtle idea sounds better to me. You know, take your time while you're out there. Take the scenic route. Learn as much as you can.
You know, like Steve said earlier about the world is a sea of energy and we're drowning in it.
Yep.
And we are. We're literally drowning in energy because it's all around us. Everywhere we go, every move we make, every sound we make, we're drowning in a sea of energy because nobody's figured out how to put a meter on it.
Well, anyway, you know, if you start talking like I'm talking, you're a heretic in the science community and even in the alternative energy community. That's why I get a little bit frustrated, because I'm thinking these guys or gals would want to find all the loopholes, all the different ideas, and you take your idea with the other guy's idea, you know, those two pieces of the puzzle might solve your problem real quick. You know?
I'm sorry, Shazis. It's about time you develop that time machine, because I want to go back to the days when meat and mates wore miniskirts, and that basically means the 1960s.
Well, the 60s weren't too bad. I was a kid back in them days.
I was born in 62, mate, so I'm missing out. I've had a deprived childhood.
Well, when people tell me things aren't possible, then that's why I like to work harder to make sure that they know that they are possible, because I believe in all kinds of possibilities. Ain't nothing in this world going to surprise me. But as far as energy uses, you know, look, Cowboy Billy Baked Beans, you can get some results out of those. If you think I'm kidding, you get a bunch of Cowboy Billy Baked Beans and several of your friends, and you guys sit around, eat them beans, and then go ride the elevator together. And you see how much power is involved in somebody trying to get off that elevator.
Well, I'll trade you beans for Vindaloo, Chavez.
What's
because
that?
There was a particularly obnoxious manager in the company I worked for from New Zealand, and I had a very good prawn biryani the night before, and we had a lift in the building we were working in that only went four floors, but it was really, really slow, and his eyes were watering by the time he got out of it.
Yep. That stuff.
Do you understand the muscular control to be able to release it without making any sound whatsoever? So it was silent assassin.
Well,
and
all he did was turn the energy from one form to the next.
Right. And his attempt to turn energy from one form to the next was expect me to work an extra 3 days a week. Sorry, 3 days a month for $5,000 a year less so he could get a bonus. So to be perfectly honest, he got what he deserved.
Yep.
You know.
All right. So
time off. It's a pure corporate whore. And when people pitch up and say you have to work for less so I can make more money, I would love to make their eyes water too.
Hey, Steve. In the United States, we call that an SBD, silent but deadly.
Yep. But either way, guys, look, there's folks out there that don't want you to know certain things because certain knowledge is essentially going to cause them their wallet to get a little bit thinner. And so we're going to have some problems trying to get things proven out here because our backs are up against the wall with, number one, all the trolls out there on the internet want to come out there and give you a rash about this and that. Of course, I start a riot of creative thinking every time I open my mouth talking about I don't care about current watts and amps, but if they'd listen long enough, they'd understand why I don't care about it at this point in the game. I don't care about it. I want the pressure, and I want the voltage. I want to be able to move energy from point A to point B as rapidly as possible. Now, thinking about that, why would that even matter? Why would I want to be able to move energy from point A to point B as rapidly as possible? What good could potentially come out of that? First off, if you look at the newer capacitor technology out there, its charge and discharge rate is insane. All right, and they have capacitors out there that are mind-boggling. I have did it in that video 9 volts I showed, and also did it in my unsubscribe video. I had some capacitors. Those are 500,000 microfarads apiece. That's, what, 1.5 million microfarads? And,
yeah.
An 800 microfarad capacitor fully charged will blow your thumb right off your hand. That's a lot of power. So you can imagine what 1.5 million microfarads potential power could be.
You're talking about an electric bomb.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there charging that up with a little hand cranker while I'm telling everybody to unsubscribe to my YouTube channel, you know? But funny thing is, after I got through showing them what I was showing them, I got more subscribers.
Well, Shaziz, I have to disagree with you there.
What?
I mean, my definition in life is to examine the contours of Kim Kardashian's backside whilst other people solve my problems for me and then not charge me a great deal of money for it.
Well, you know, if that's what...
Is that not a priority in life?
If that's what keeps your energy flowing, brother, who am I to complain?
There is a certain...
But can you light your house with it?
What, Kim Kardashian's butt? That would require a lot of brown gas, mate.
Oh my gosh. This conversation just went downhill.
What I'm trying to do is to point out the insanity of humanity.
Well,
you know, they're so dedicated to the causes of irrelevance that they cannot see that we're being ushered into a new world order, if you want to call it that, or a new society or a new structure of global governance, which means that, you know, if power corrupts, what happens when we've got one big swinger that stands at the top of the pyramid that's basically issuing orders as though he's God himself?
Have you?
I mean, the dude fell off the mountain 2,000 years ago when the Greeks got the living snot beaten out of them by a lot of people.
Have you heard the new terminology coming out of California and other places called zero-point housing?
That sounds like soapy liberal talk, mate.
Well, California has a new mandate out there, new law, legislation, or whatever, that says by 2020 that all houses have to conform to 0 point, which means that they're all self-contained generating systems. So you're either going to have solar or wind power. You're going to have your roof is covered with solar panels, and you're going to have wind power out there. And your house will have just the right amount of insulation in it. It will generate its own power independent of the grid. And so it will have a 0 point, no carbon footprint. Now they're saying that by 2020, everybody... Yeah, well, they're talking about that.
Demonstrated that.
They're talking about the same thing that we're talking about, but we're stupid for talking about it.
Well, Chaziz, does that mean that every time somebody comes to your door on a political campaign and gives you their spiel when they want you to vote for them, you have to whip out a dirty, great big windmill so you can catch all the hot air?
Yeah, that would do it, because they sure do get a lot of it.
Just you, mate. You make serious bucks out of that.
Well, here's the thing, man. They don't care whether or not we get free alternative energy. They don't care if we get 0 point energy, all right? They just want to make sure that when we do get that kind of energy, they have control over it. That's it. It's already here. We already have all the technology to build the perfect generator, literally. It's right there in front of our face. Now the question is, are we going to hand all that information over to them and allow them to have total control of it? Or are we going to take it for ourselves and have our own control over it? They want to basically force you out of your house, all right, and into tightly compacted little small tiny houses and big buildings that can fit 1 million people into a couple square feet, so to speak. You know? So they got control.
The next time somebody meets a UN representative, ask them exactly what Agenda 21 is, and why should the United Nations dictate to sovereign countries what they can and can't do?
Well, there's the key.
Because that's what it comes down to. I mean, this whole zero-point houses is part of the whole Agenda 21. And if somebody digs a dirty great big pit in their back garden and starts filling it full of cow manure to catch the methane from it, to convert that then into heat, energy, and whatever requirements your house needs, and you disconnect yourself from that gas mains that's supplied by a public utility, then the UN mandate means that your house is unsuitable for habitation because you are not connected to the grid. And I know people that have been evicted from their properties because they have done just that.
Well, look, man, this whole so-called energy crisis that they've been crying over all these years, and the so-called man-made global warming and stuff or whatever, you know, on one side of their neck they're saying, oh, we got to save the planet, but on the other side of their neck they want to make charge you money. It don't matter if it's really happening, all the money in the world ain't going to fix it. Alright, what's going to fix it is people out there actually building alternative energy devices that work and are proven to work. And in order to do that, then people got to stop, letting their egos go basically past the doggone solution, you know? You know, I know more than you kind of attitude. I don't know more than everybody out there. I understand a lot because I paid attention, but as far as, manufacturing or, other skill sets, there's people out there that's got a heck of a lot better skill sets than I got that you get those folks at the table and in the shop, and all together we put all these pieces of the puzzle together, we build it, we get it done, and then we shut up about it. I don't want to talk about alternative energy for the next 30 years of my life if I'm living that long. I want to get it done. Plain and simple. You know? That's what Stuart, I'm talking about.
Stuart sent me a chunk of 3-foot balloons, and I'm going to collect hydrogen. I'm going to run a wire way up there.
Cool.
And start collecting that voltage.
Well, what do you say we take a quick music break and refresh our cubby?
Sounds good.
All right, everybody, stay tuned. You're listening to Mad Science. Peace and love.
Turn it up. I'm a
trouble all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and raised. No pleasure here on earth I found. For in this world I'm bound to ramble. I have no friends to help me now. He has no friends to help him now. Perhaps I'll die upon this train.
Perhaps he'll die upon this train.
You can bury me in Sunbeam Valley. For many years where I may lay. Sleeping in my grave,
while he is sleeping in his grave.
Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never will see no more. But there is one promise that is given. I'll meet you on God's golden shore.
He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Crap. Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Can you hear me? 1.21 gigawatts, man. What's a gigawatt? Well, you know, I was talking to you guys before we came back on air here. I was talking about these little hard drive motors and what's inside those hard drive motors, which tells me whenever I seen inside those hard drive motors and the results that can be gotten with high RPMs with those small hard drive motors is that, you know, inside those hard drive motors, there is very little copper wire. There's not very much in there at all. All right, and the magnet inside there is really super weak. It's just a little ceramic magnet, circular magnet, sitting inside a doggone hard drive motor. And Matthew Drummond basically showed me a deal that Stan Morin was doing, and they were using these washing machine pumps to pretty much do the same exact thing. Now, when you take these pumps apart, you'll note inside there that there also is a little round magnet inside that pump. And it's not the it's not the amount of copper wire it's in there. It is the how fast that weak magnet is actually flying past the copper wire, the lines of flux passing that copper wire, that is actually creating the voltage. So when I'm thinking about this and I'm thinking how them hard drive motors actually function, and then what you can actually do with them by running them in reverse at seriously high RPMs, there's something else going on inside that motor that isn't from the standard school book, so to speak. Once you get to a certain point, a certain speed, you're taking this thing, like from the Dremel, I'm running this thing up over 5,000 RPMs. I can't remember what the max RPMs is on the Dremel. But the faster you get that, the higher the voltage comes out of there. What do you guys think is going on here?
Well, the Dremel that you had, Shaziz, was up to 35,000 RPM.
Muddy said something, and Steve said something. Let's try this again. One at a time. Let's go.
2,800 RPM.
He said 2,800 RPMs.
You just take 5,000 because I'm an overexpecter.
Yeah. Well, even at that, you know, why is it that the faster you get that doggone magnet to spin, and even though it's a weak magnet, the higher the voltage you get coming out of that thing?
Oscillation.
Aha! Uh-huh. So you're just changing the frequency of it. So I ain't so stupid crooked-eyed after all, am I? See, Gerard Morin, that's his name, he did a video where he literally took a 2,500-watt generator, hooked it into a 50K transformer, and then took that 50K transformer down into a 25K transformer, and was running many things that took a lot of amperage, a lot of watts, in order to run. It's like three space heaters and a fan motor or something that he had on this doggone thing. And everybody who's ever run a space heater knows they seriously draw some power. And in the process of doing this, I listened to this video really closely as he's starting up each one of these deals. I'm listening for that generator to bog down. Not once did that generator even budge bogging down.
Shit is.
Yeah.
Do you know what the oldest ever recorded human diagram is?
Uh-oh.
And this is attributed to the Aboriginals in Australia, because they've kind of the oldest recorded writings or designs or drawings or whatever, and it's allegedly anywhere from 30 to 50,000 years old. It's a spiral.
Well, and they talk about the vortexes and stuff like that by the design and the star-shaped coils and all the different configurations that they wind the coils, the toroidal coils and so on and so forth, basically sending the energy in certain directions and picking some of it up as it goes by, going back in the other direction. You know, using Lenz's law to get that back EMF. That's what a doggone magnetic ballast does. When you pulse the energy, high voltage, or the normal AC current to a magnetic ballast, the field expands and collapses, and on that collapse, it actually produces energy back that adds to the system that runs your fluorescent light bulbs. You know?
If you look at the galactic spiral arm down to the point of the spiral on a on a snail shell, even to the method that trees grow their limbs to maximize the amount of sunlight that they can actually absorb, this is throughout the entire human history and nature.
Yep.
And what is a hard drive motor other than something that spins in a spiral? Because when you've got those little readers skimming across your platters, they are reading something that is a spiral again.
Okay, now this is a job for Muddy Mudman. We need him to fly in on his super cape because Muddy knows a lot about windmills. All right, he knows a lot about props.
Again, a spiral effect.
Yeah, again. And he'll have to come closer to his mic because last time I could barely hear him. Are you still there, Muddy?
No.
No. All right, you're familiar with the windmill blades because you make them. You know, and you got friends in the wind turbine community that make them as well. Are you familiar with the helix blade?
Yeah.
Why does it work so much better than a normal prop?
It doesn't.
It does at slower speeds.
No, it's great for low speeds, but it's not. They make them wide and they make it tall, and that's where they gain their power. For the windswept area, the prop is the most efficient.
Okay, but for the lower wind speeds, the helix blade is better.
Oh, it just starts turning, that's all.
Alright, well, regardless of all that, just the different configurations of the different shapes of wind, like I'm looking at your picture here on Skype, and you got like three blades on this one, as opposed to the two-blade prop that you made in your last video or so. So,
yeah, that's the Wood 103 from OtherPower.com.
Okay, so what's...
If you go to OtherPower.com, you can get the PDF to learn how to build that. It's all wood, wire, and magnets, except for a steel shaft and three bolts.
Okay, so what's the difference in this as far as efficiency-wise to speed and torque? What makes this better than a single prop?
What makes what better? You're talking about the helix?
Well, no, the blade that's on your picture, on your Skype picture. What makes that better than a single prop?
You're talking about single prop meaning two blades?
No, like the one you just made in your last video.
It starts up, basically the three blades starts up a little easier.
Okay.
But it has more drag on it, so it's still not as efficient. The most efficient is a single blade rather than two blades or all that. It's just one blade with a counterweight, and it gets to higher RPMs and it reaches the vet's limit.
Okay, so turbines such as the ones that go on top of your house, those little turbines that they use for cooling down your attic by spinning around, how efficient do you think those things are?
They're down near 5%. They're only driven by the air coming out of it, and when the wind blows, the centrifugal force kind of helps the air to spin out and creates a little bit more of a vacuum to help suck the air out of the attic.
So essentially what you just told me is that basically the heat rising from the attic is what actually spins those.
Pretty much.
And then the wind assists on the other side.
When the wind blows, it helps because of the centrifugal force that the air is going through.
So, jet turbines and stuff, how do they get those things to get such crazy RPMs?
they sit there and spin them up first to get the air flowing, and then they start igniting them on the secondary ones with spin, and that speeds it up, and then they ignite more gas. So basically, the turbines spin one direction. Some of them are spinning the other direction, so you don't get as much of a vortex. So you got clockwise and counterclockwise, and the pitches of the blades change as it goes through.
So let me ask you.
Basically, it's nothing but a spinning board. A dual spinning vortex that spins against itself, but basically it sucks the air in. Kind of like a rocket stove is more efficient than a regular stove or just a fire burning.
Kind of like the impellers in a vacuum?
Yeah, they're basically using diesel fuel. That jet fuel is basically diesel.
All right, so now let me ask you another question. With all that said, there's a point in why I'm asking you all this stuff right there. Did you see the last video that I called X13 Fun, where I'm using a squirrel cage to actually turn one of the X13 motors?
Yeah, where you use the leaf blower.
Yeah. So if that was your project, how would you make that more efficient? As opposed to, you know, the squirrel cage or the direction at which you got the wind blowing in there or what?
If I were you, I'd build a lens turbine or what is it called? I just had it on top of my head there. One of them egg beaters.
Tesla turbines used flat discs.
Right. The a Darius. I'd use a Darius because it takes wind from all different directions and stuff like that. And you can build it where it's got a wide footprint and get a lot of torque off it and then gear it up.
So if I did what you just said right there, would that add to the efficiency of the gizmo I got going on?
Oh yeah.
You wouldn't need an
electric blower that's only 45% efficient at best to sit there and make less.
All right, so if I added what you just said right there to a weighted flywheel, such as like a 60-pound weighted flywheel on its own independent bearings that just coupled to the blade that you're talking about, would that raise the efficiency any?
No, it'd lower it.
Why would it lower it?
Because it takes energy to get that flywheel to go. Flywheel is only a storage.
Yeah.
But having to spin that, the load on the bearing and stuff is still friction, and that's loss.
All right.
You're trying to get as much power out of something as you possibly can. You can spin that flywheel up there, and for a split second, you can spin that flywheel up there and then have it to where it's geared up and engage it to the motor all at once. And then you get some good amps. You can possibly blow the windings, but you're only gonna do it for a short time, and that flywheel's gonna expend all that stored energy. That's about it.
Well, I noticed that whenever I shut the fan blade off, that you can sit there and watch the voltmeter, and the centrifugal force built up in that squirrel cage fan keeps it running. Even though it's slowing down, keeps it running for some time after you shut it off. Now you understand why I'm asking the question about the flywheel?
Still, a flywheel is stored energy.
Yep.
You have to put energy into it. You're not going to get as much out of it. But you can get it past... A flywheel is mainly designed as You build it up in there. It's kind of like a capacitor. You store energy and you can get it back out. Capacitors are a lot more efficient as far as batteries. Batteries, you put in 3/3 and you get 2/3 out. Capacitors, right around 98%, but during the time that it's stored, you slowly have a leakage current.
Have you ever seen a freestyling bike?
Yeah.
You notice how those back wheels work?
Yeah.
You know, you can pedal it, and then you can stop pedaling, and instead of the pedals keep spinning around in a circle, it allows it to freewheel and roll on down the road. But if you put it up on a stand and you start to pedal it, you got some tension going on there, and when you stop pedaling it, that wheel will continue to spin for quite some time after.
Yeah. Well, Boomer was had a little experience with that. He had a flywheel on his dual escapement, his big pendulum for gravity research.
Yeah.
Every time that arm would go up or go back down as the pendulum goes down, and then gets to the end of its swing and it would go up, it would bump the chain, which would spin the flywheel, and then the flywheel would stop. It wouldn't keep on going in a full revolution. So our basic analyzing analogy, that's the word I'm looking for.
The thing about
was that we were going to just hook that arm up to a pump and put it up to and pump it up, because it, the way he was figuring was weight and distance. So we figured we could put enough weight up a certain distance and put it up to a reservoir, and then let that water flow down in baskets on a long chain or carousel. That would drive the flywheel and also drive the alternator, and that would smooth it out rather than have the bump, 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 and all that friction and possibly breaking the chain. If you actually have any decent power, you could actually go ahead and just put it up there, and you could use the power on demand to rewind the machine. And if we got anything left over, then we'd know exactly how much power we have.
Well, I think
the best way to measure is machine.
I think that with all our mechanical / electrical knowledge all combined in together, we could at the very least build the most efficient generator that in existence today.
All right, Shizit, I'm going to put my little 2 cents in on this flywheel deal with your fun with the XRP.
Yep.
The flywheel, like Buddy said, it only stores energy. It does not create any energy whatsoever. Now, on a wind turbine using natural wind power, yes, absolutely 100% flywheel. But on your machine, unless you're going to turn the electricity off and on now and then, take the flywheel.
The flywheel is only for the centrifugal force that would be assisting the squirrel cage.
Right.
So, if it's on its own independent bearings, it's not connected to the deal. All you have to do is get it started. The faster you get it started and centrifugal force takes over, it will help to carry that around, if you understand what I'm saying. So, it's not there to make it over-efficient. It's there to make it more efficient.
Smoother. Only reason you need it is if your source of energy is intermittent or your drain of power is intermittent. Then you need a flywheel. If you've had the same force driving it and the exact same drain of energy, then you do not need a flywheel.
Such as the drain whenever you put it under load and it begins to slow down in the squirrel cage, but that weight, that weighted momentum helping to overcome that drain?
Yes, exactly.
Now you see why I want the flywheel.
Well, because you need to put a drain on.
Yeah, once I turn that light on, the thing wants to slow down. But if it's got 60 pounds of weight spinning around there, that extra weight will help to assist to reduce the drag that's happening.
Exactly. Now, as far as your flywheel on that particular thing, I would suggest using the disc from the disc brakes on an automobile, because they're double layered and they have little veins inside, and then take your weed eater and nozzle it down, because like you said, putting your finger over a garden hose, it shoots out a much stronger pressure. So if you take it and nozzle down your weed eater, the air will come out with more pressure,
yep,
and therefore cause the flywheel to turn faster than if you just blew on it.
Well, essentially what I'd like to be able to accomplish is to do the same thing that I did with the computer hard drive, is to raise the RPMs up to a ludicrous amount so that it will produce a higher amount of voltage.
Right.
Now, like I said, at this point, I'm not looking to run my refrigerator off of it. All I want to do is to raise the voltage up as high as I possibly can to get to
it. Dennis, pneumatic drill.
Oh, my God. Heck yes.
They're like 50 times faster than a Dremel. If you can get a flywheel going up and get it up to speed, then go ahead and gear that thing up and put it on your deal there. You won't have any copper left inside that sucker once you engage it.
So if you used a hydraulic clutch in between the squirrel cage and the flywheel, that whenever the centrifugal force of the squirrel cage got up fast enough to spin the hydraulic fluid through the system and then engage a transmission, which in turn you could shift through the gears, speeding that thing up, like kind of riding like a 10-speed bike, is really hard to start in certain gears, and it's really easy to start in other gears. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yep.
So basically just moving the energy from point A to point B. That's all I'm talking about.
Exactly.
It's like, right. You know, if you took a 7-speed transaxle out of a riding lawnmower and you use that electric motor, it wouldn't take a very strong electric motor to be able to produce a lot of torque.
I look at it this way. You have to ask one of them crash dummies, and he'll verify exactly what I tell you. If current is how fast that little wheel is spinning around and stored up all that energy, and you're rolling down the track and you're going very fast, you have a lot of mass going past a certain point per second, then it hits the wall. And when it hits that wall, that's like shutting off a coil of wire with the electricity going through it. You know, when a coil resists the change in current, okay? So it's starting to... the longer you leave it hooked up to that voltage, the faster the electrons start spinning, because it builds up in the magnetic field, and then you shut it off. And the deal is, you need a big knife switch to do that, because all of that electricity going through really fast hits that wall like the car at the end and builds up a lot of pressure or voltage.
Yeah.
And that's what destroys the car. Bam, it's just an instant stop. It's like falling from a building.
So that's why they put these...
Okay so far, and you hit the bottom. It's that sudden stop at the bottom that builds up all the pressure.
That's why they put these crash barriers in filled with water and airbags inside your car to cushion the impact. So that's what the plasma reactor can do, is cushion the impact from the high voltage to the other side.
Right. They hit that water, and that water may shoot up 50 feet in the air.
Yep.
Energy displacement.
Exactly. You cannot destroy energy.
But imagine the pressure wave that would come out of that if you pulsed a coil at that range.
Woo!
If you go watch Russ from RWG Research doing his railgun video, and don't pay attention to the railgun at all. Look in the background and watch those cables on that capacitor bank that he's got.
Yeah.
Man, as soon as he hits that switch, those cables just leap off the floor, man. That pulse of energy going through there, there's a lot of power. So, I'm saying we got what we need to do it. And I'm working on proving that, because I'm actually trying to put some things together. But I'm going to use pieces of all the different things out there that we already know of mechanically what's going on.
Well, Stuart had a comment to add on this. I don't know why he didn't hit the join call button yet, but we've already added him.
Yeah, I thought he's in here.
Oh, I don't see him up there on the board. Oh, yeah, there. No, that's not it.
It
says there was a guy I saw had about 6 or so 10-speed bikes linked together, with a weight turning the wheel of the first bike wheel, and each bike had a different gear ratio, and that powered the mobile home. First bike must have been first gear, last bike in 10th gear, and the weight he had took about half an hour to reach the ground.
Well,
in other words, he was just continuously gearing. I'm sure he had it from, gear ratio on each set, but as it went to the next one, it started off in the big gear, going down to the small gear. The next set went around from the big gear of that one to the smaller gear of the next one. So eventually, the speed on the last one was at ultimate.
Can you run your actual flux wind turbine like a motor?
Yeah.
What I'd like to see is an experiment done with your best blade on there, and I'd like to see the draw of the voltage.
How much wind I get out of it?
No. What I want to see is, when you're running it, how much voltage is being drawn off your power source, and then when the wind picks up and spins that puppy even faster, how much more efficient that motor starts to run.
Ooh, I think I see where you're going, she says.
Yeah, if you're running any DC motor, it gets up to the RPM of that voltage. You have so many RPMs per volt. And you have any losses means that motor is actually spinning less than what that voltage is trying to push it at. So you raise the voltage and the RPMs go up even more. If you speed the RPMs up mechanically past that, then the voltage is still the same. It's just that the current starts going back into the battery.
Aha!
The current is flowing in the opposite direction, even though the voltage is the same. In other words, if you look at the positive wire and you put a bidirectional ammeter on there, one that shows current gain or current loss, you're going to watch the meter swing the opposite direction.
Okay, so if you had an electrically...
It'll still be positive. That confuses a lot of people.
If you had...
Same thing on an AC induction motor. If you plug that thing into the wall, this is what I'm getting at. It's AC. You plug it into the wall, and that thing's spinning. Now you find some kind of a gear ratio where you can put a crank on it by hand, and you can add some power to it. It actually starts running the current in the opposite direction without a grid tie inverter, and it'll be full sine wave AC. It'll start putting current back into your wall.
All right. So if you had an electrically assist windmill that barely turned it, just kept the windmill. Let's say it takes a speed of 20 miles per hour to get the doggone blade spinning. So you spin this thing up to just right at 20 miles an hour. And as soon as that 20 mile an hour wind kicks in and starts to overclock that doggone motor speed, now what you got?
Reverse current.
Uh-huh.
Let me get down with the numbers. Let me get down right down to numbers so you can actually see this. Your AC induction motor has a magnetic field rotating in the induction coil that's in the middle. That's that deal that's made of cast aluminum and steel plates all sandwiched together to make a big round cylinder. It's 1800, but you look at the motor RPM on its open RPM. It's 1725 RPM rather than 1800. That's because it has a slip rate. So you've lost 75 RPM. So the deal is, if you spin it up 150 more, which is 75 more than the 1800, you start to put current back into the wall.
There you go.
Because of the slip rate, and it's not gonna change the frequency at all.
No, but it's...
If you try to spin it even faster than that, it's gonna put even more current into the wall.
It's actually going to make that load not have to work near as hard with some sort of external force in there, like air pressure. So that's what this generator that they keep talking about doing. They got a flywheel situation. It's basically like a tornado in a box, and the only thing the wind is doing is electrically assisting something that's already been moving under its own power using the batteries. And so when the wind overclocks that force that it takes to generate to turn the motor, then that starts dumping energy back into the doggone battery. You see where
right.
I'm going
well,
there?
If I did this with the three-phase dual permanent magnet rotor axial flux wind turbine alternator, and I had a three phase driver to that motor wind turbine alternator, and I tried to crank it faster, I would not get any more RPMs like I would on the induction, but because I'm pushing on the forward on that wave, trying to get it to go faster, the current will flow in the opposite direction, and your three-phase driver isn't doing any work. So that's what would happen.
Well,
I had to throw all that that in there so you could see it in layman's terms.
Yep. Just bouncing around ideas, but like I said, man, take all the pieces of the puzzle, use what you know, don't use the parts that's going to cause you problems, find ways
like
to...
Just like bouncing off the upper right-hand side of your cranium, down to the left and over here, and bouncing off your ear.
Yep. And so with that said... We're down to the last 5 minutes here, and so I'm saying that before I get out of here, I was at a playground out there in Hale, Missouri, and there was an old style merry-go-round out there, and I started spinning that doggone thing. And I walked away, and probably about 5 minutes after I walked away, that thing is still spinning around.
Right? Stored energy. It took a lot of energy to get it started, didn't it?
Yeah, but see, here's the thing, man. If you just imagine that same deal that had some sails up on that thing, like the ones that they got on the surfers use, you know? And you had some big, huge sails up on that thing, and the wind's blowing by and pushing those sails around and keeping that thing spinning. You already seen the kind of voltage you can get out of one of them X13 motors whenever you just barely spin it with your fingers. So now you've got not just the rotations going on, but you also got a lot of torque because there's a lot of weight behind that carousel because it's all made out of iron. And so you don't just run up there and try to stop it because it'll take your arm off. So
kind of like Boomer's pendulum when he almost fell in that day.
So imagine one of them old style merry-go-rounds with an X13 mounted to it and big sails at the top of it, you know.
There is a guy that put these flaps that opened up every time that it was in the windward direction. And yep. It was a merry-go-round. It's what he built his generator out of.
There you go.
It was kind of noisy listening to things open up and then close. So that it was kind of slipstring, you know, kind of like a card. You throw a card across the room on its edge, not on the flat. So, yeah, the guy did that. It worked pretty well.
Well,
but it's a lot of wind.
It's all the way down. Yeah, it takes a lot of wind, but you're not paying for the wind.
It's free.
So there you go. So basically taking everything in conjunction that we know and building a generator and reducing, at the very least, making something work more efficient. The motor that I was using to turn the squirrel cage never slowed down at all. There was absolutely no direct coupling. And so from the point from the generator to finally get on down the road to the load, in between those two points right there will be the system that will be set up to not allow Lenz's law to take effect and no back EMF to even occur. All I want to do...
If you put a load on the secondary side, it will slow down.
If you put a load directly on it, yeah, it will slow down. But Raymond stood
secondary
right there...
slow down.
Raymond stood right there and watched as we created plasma. While I was in the plasma state, absolutely no back EMF. The moment that plasma heated up that thermal element inside there and made that circuit, man, that thing was instantaneous. The light bulb come on bright, and then the squirrel cage started slowing down. So,
well, one other thing that I was meaning to share, and I'll try to make it as quick as possible. Tesla was always trying to say, I'm not transmitting the energy through the air. I'm not using RF. I am transmitting through the ground, telluric currents. He said it several times. And his secret is, however high the tower is, you must have ground radials. That's buried wires heading out in different degrees. What they have is basically... they have to be the same length, and they say you need 120 of them all radiating out, radials in the ground to transmit through the ground.
Well, maybe.
But you don't really need that much. You can put four out in all different directions and have them the same length and maybe a little longer. That is called a counterpoise of transmission.
Well,
or a ground plane, and that's the secret to transmit. Tesla's energy the way that he meant to do it.
You can learn a whole lot by Tesla's technology, and knowing that nature is always going to try to balance itself out, and all you want to do is get that work done is no different than getting in your boat and riding down the river. That's it. You're getting work done.
There was a guy in Newport News. He called himself Catfish. He'd say, "Good morning, Catfish Jumper." And this guy, he had a modulator on his CB radio. He had a tower that went up. And he did not use radio. But he had chicken wire buried in all directions. He was doing 25 watts, and we could swear that he was doing 1,500. No matter how far you went, he was still... So anyway,
yep.
That works. The ground system, not the antenna.
Well, all of it's related. So with that said, that's been an awesome show, guys. Basically, people, if you like what you hear, just tell your friends about it. The podcast will be up soon. And if we can get everybody together at the table, we can get things done. That's what it's all about here on Shazizz Radio and Mad Science and the Knights of the Round Table. You guys got anything quick you want to say real quick before we leave up out of here?
Said it before, say it again. E pluribus unum.
Yep. What about you, Steve?
Boom shanka.
I don't even want to know what that means.
May the seed of your loin be fruitful in the belly of your woman.
Oh man, I'm mercy. Sorry I asked. What about you, Justin?
Be who you are.
Yep. All right, everybody. Muddy, anything?
Miss y'all already. See you next week.
All right. Stay tuned. Knights of the Round Table tomorrow, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central Time. Join in and help us find the solutions and give the information out to everybody and his brother. Share it on your social medias. If you guys like what you hear, come in here and talk around in the chat room and let everybody know what we're trying to accomplish. So with that said, peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
21 gigawatts!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.